Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. In 2001, as a part of Chicago Public Library Chicago Reads program, reporter Maria Mills' newspaper, the Chicago Tribune, sent her to the hometown of To Kill a Mockingbird author Harper Lee, with the idea of getting a sense of how Monroeville, Alabama, shaped and influenced her book. There was little hope of speaking with the author herself. Lee had routinely refused interviews for decades. But after meeting a few town residents, Mills was surprised to get an invitation to speak with Lee's older sister, Alice, an equally interesting woman who had inherited their father's law practice and was still practicing well into her 90s. Alice had served as a gatekeeper for her sister for years, rebuffing virtually all requests for interviews. But after meeting with Alice, Mills was equally surprised to get a call from the author herself for an off-the-record talk. That talk began a 5-year relationship that continued with Mills moving in next door to the Lees. The result is the memoir, The Mockingbird Next Door, Life with Harper Lee. Maria Mills carefully refers to the book as a memoir, not a biography, and in fact, Harper Lee issued a statement denouncing the book, yet Sister Alice signed a statement agreeing to participate, and several close friends believe that Harper Lee herself was aware of the intention prior to her 2007 stroke. You can meet Maria Mills this evening at 6:30 as she discusses the book at the Circle Cinema for a Book Smart Tulsa event. It will be followed by a showing of the classic Gregory Peck film To Kill a Mockingbird at 7:30. Maria Mills is my guest today on Studio Tulsa. Maria Mills, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
This wonderful book, The Mockingbird Next Door, details your relationship, your friendship with Harper Lee, or Nell, as she is known in Monroeville, Alabama. This began in 2001 when your paper at the time, the Chicago Tribune, sent you to Monroeville to hopefully try to get an interview or at least learn something about Harper Lee. The odds were sort of long at that time. She hadn't been speaking to the press for a long time. And yet when you came to Monroeville, you found that the Lee sisters, which includes her sister, Alice, were pretty open and welcoming.
I didn't expect to meet them. And in fact, it was the Chicago library system, really, that was the genesis for that story. They had selected To Kill a Mockingbird for their One Book, One Chicago program, like so many, where the ideas do.
But that was pretty early in that sort of thing where cities will read one book.
That's right. Since then, many more have initiated programs like that. And the Lee sisters, as you mentioned, both had been great supporters of libraries always. And so when I went to Monroeville on assignment, I didn't expect to meet them. We thought it would be interesting for readers just to get a sense of that town of 7,000 people, which in Harper Lee's words is 100 miles from anywhere, and just to get a sense of what the book meant to that town all those years later. And so it was a surprise and really a wonderful one when I ended up having a conversation first with Alice Finchley, who died just last month at age 103, and soon after with her sister, Nell Harper Lee, who would spend part of each year in Monroeville, their hometown, and then take the train to her other life in New York City.
And it began with you speaking with very respectfully for neighbors, and I think you surmise in the book that the way you asked for an interview or you asked for information about her, something about that sort of suggested to Nell that, in fact, something about it was respectful and not pushy, and that sort of appealed to her in some way.
I think so. I mean, just the simple courtesy of having written a letter saying that I would be going down to Monroeville and requesting to speak with them, but certainly not demanding or feeling entitled to that, probably helped. I think they'd not had experiences with people who felt entitled to an interview over the years and didn't appreciate that. So I think that was a factor. And I think timing, particularly as then my book was in the works, was a factor as well. They were already in their later years when I met them, and they had some things they were ready to share with people. This is a memoir. It's not a biography. She's not a believer in biographies of living writers, but it was a chance to kind of give readers a sense of what it was like to spend time with these two remarkable women. They were every bit as interesting as you might hope they would be if you love the book.
Now, Alice was the gatekeeper for Harper Lee for the most part. When requests came in, she was an attorney and a really apparently a crackerjack attorney who was an equally remarkable woman who she was quite a bit older than Harper Lee, and yet was still going to the office every day, well into her 90s, and practicing law, reading voraciously. And so anytime anybody had a request for interviews or the like, Alice was the gatekeeper and mostly would be a courteous but pretty firm no.
Yes, in fact, her sister, Nell Harper, would call Alice Atticus in a skirt. Alice Finchley had practiced law with her father and then after his death continued practicing and very much was in that mold of a civic-minded attorney in a small town and did serve that role with her sister. And we had such a wonderful conversation the first time I met her. There was just a natural rapport there. And I think that also probably contributed to this most unexpected call that came to my motel room at the Best Western on the outskirts of Monroeville on that first visit there, and I picked up the phone and heard, "Miss Mills, hello, this is Harper Lee." And she wondered if we could arrange to meet the following day. So that was not at all a call I expected.
Once you later got to know Harper Lee, you were explaining about the sort of social network of Monroeville, and you said it's like Radio Bembe, which is sort of the gossip circuit, if you will. It's a way in the Caribbean of explaining that, and she referred to it as Radio Monroeville.
She got a kick out of that term and that sense of how just from one neighbor's lips to another can stories travel as just almost as if they
and
were
in fact,
broadcast
on, that first,
on radio.
In that first visit, you were talking to people who knew her, and they were all reporting back to the Lee sisters, weren't they?
Well, some of them anyway. I think the Lees behind the scenes were able to keep tabs to a degree on, you know, some of the many people that would be coming through town over the years and a little more aware than people maybe realized of what was happening. Although they also, they lived in a modest little house in Monroeville, a little red brick house, and did for the most part steer clear of that kind of thing. They had their own routines and sort of rhythms of daily life, and it was kind of a parallel existence to the tourism, for example, that still is a regular feature of life in Monroeville for those who visit that town. For example, they put on the play of To Kill a Mockingbird in April and May every year. It sells out, and yet that wasn't something that they were attending. They kind of had their own life, and that was a sort of a parallel existence in a sense.
So when Harper Lee called you, you met at a McDonald's, right?
Well, yeah, the first time I met her, she came to my motel room.
She came to your motel room first.
And we had an initial conversation, which was not at all what I expected. There was a certain reserve that you would expect if you've read about her, but very quickly.
And she said very quickly, this is all off the record, right?
Yes. Later, she gave me permission to include that in what I was writing, but at the time, she knew she wanted, partly, I think, to tell me her perspective on some things that would be useful as I was putting together my newspaper story. But right, that was a visit, as it was termed. And she, of course, was interested in knowing who I had spoken with and what I had learned. And my favorite memory of that first conversation was I mentioned to her that I had recently seen a documentary with Gregory Peck talking about the making of the movie soon after the book was published. And when his name came up, she leaned over that little table and said, "Isn't he delicious?" And it was wonderful. It was a side of her I didn't expect to see, particularly in that initial conversation. But it was a first glimpse at a sense of fun that really marked a lot of my time with her and her sister. There was, for all her public reserve, there really was a twinkle in her eye and, you know, sharing stories of the characters they grew up with in that small town, that kind of thing.
And I think this gets into what the heart of the book is. We refer to Harper Lee, people like J.D. Salinger, as recluses. And really what it is more a sense of they don't want to talk to the press and they don't want to promote themselves. I mean, she lived a normal life, a small town Alabama life.
You know, and I think that word for a lot of people conjures up, particularly if it's in the context of Harper Lee, Boo Radley from her novel,
right,
who truly was someone who was indoors and hiding out from the world in a sense. And my experience with her was that she spent plenty of time meeting with friends, going out to eat, did some traveling, but she wasn't public in her appearances. And she decided pretty early on that she would occasionally speak to the press in a very limited way, but clearly she made a decision not to be giving interviews.
What I really enjoyed most about the book was this relationship between the sisters, Alice and Harper. obviously very fond of each other and just two peas in a pod in many senses of the word. I mean, they both have these just incredible minds. And as you mentioned earlier, Alice died at the age of 103 last month. And what was amazing to me was how important she was to the town. If anybody had needed a quote on history or knowing something about what had happened in Alabama, probably well before her birth, she was the institution.
Oh, she was remarkable. It had such a memory. Nell Harper Lee used to say sometimes if someone wasn't sure about a bit of their family history or the town history, we'll ask Alice. That was the thing to do. And she also was a mentor. I mentioned before that her sister would call her Atticus in a skirt. And mm-hmm. I think their father, who was the inspiration for the Atticus Finch character, like their father, it was a very sort of quiet, steadfast civic-mindedness that she had. Like him, she was very involved in the Methodist Church. Like him, she took a particular approach, I think, to small-town law practice. And like their father, she and her sister both had been golfers in earlier life. That was, I think, one of the things about To Kill a Mockingbird was that Harper Lee captured a whole world in that small town, and it was such a privilege to get a sense of what that world looked like all those years later. When I was there, through their eyes, we spent a lot of time going to places that they remembered, that kind of thing.
Yeah. After your first meeting with Harper, your editors wisely said, well, that may have been off the record, but we've got something here. I mean, she's talking to a reporter.
Well, it was unusual even for Alice Finchley to be willing to do that.
And so they were very accommodating in letting you come back. And in fact, the ladies invited you back.
They did, and to do more reporting. And then after my story came out, which I flew down to Alabama, hand-delivered it to them, and invited me to continue spending time there, which I did.
In fact, you moved in next door.
I did. They offered to serve as character references, which they're pretty good character references in that town. Living in Chicago, I got a kick out of Nell Harper's indignation at the rent that was proposed for a house two doors down from theirs. A friend had suggested I look at that, and I did say to them, that seems like that might be a little close for comfort. I won't even inquire, as the friend had suggested, if you'd rather that I not. But they encouraged me, too. However, once I looked at the house and learned that the proposed rent, very reasonable sounding to a Chicago woman, of $650 a month for a nice, I think, three-bedroom house, that Nell Harper's reaction to that was highway robbery. And it turned out the house right next door to theirs was for sale, not for rent, but was something that I was able to rent on a month-to-month basis for the more reasonable $450 a month. And, you know, that proximity was a gift. I think we all know how natural a conversation, you know, in the driveway can be, and the chance to see them just living daily life. Nell, as you mentioned, was a great drinker of coffee and would often invite me to go to McDonald's and just chat over a cup of coffee. Mm-hmm. It was just such a privilege. And also, I mean, as you know, as a journalist, a luxury to have that kind of time to let things unfold the way they did.
And I guess I have to ask this question. As a journalist, you know that a lot of times people talk to you for your role as a reporter, not for who you are. And I'm sure you had to be wrestling with this question, why are these ladies open up to you? I mean, it became a great friendship, and I think that became clear. Mm-hmm. But at the beginning, I think, why do you suppose they opened up to you particularly? Was there a story they wanted to get out? You know, there's been in the last decade or so, there were sort of stories about how she wrote To Kill a Mockingbird. Was it all her work? How did her editors shape it? Did Truman Capote, I think there's a rumor that he contributed in some way. Was it about setting the record straight, or what exactly?
There were a couple of things that both talked about wanting to set the record straight about, and we went over those, and I included them in my book. Mm-hmm. I think they also knew, though, that this was true for the newspaper story, and again for my book, that if they told me something was off the record, that I would respect that. Oftentimes, it was simply a matter of sparing the feeling of a friend or a relative in a story they were sharing. But I think they knew that I didn't feel entitled to more than they were ready to share. And there was this kind of natural rapport. I wrote in the book that I feel like my late grandfather in Black River Falls, Wisconsin, slipped a key in my pocket years before I met them that unlocked the door to that experience. He had grown up during the Depression and had wonderful stories he would tell me around the kitchen table. And I think part of this, to me, surprisingly, quick and natural rapport that developed with Alice and then with Nell Harper maybe had to do with that initial relationship and all those conversations.
You were a good listener, or you had that experience?
For example, my grandfather, he had just a very particular sensibility, and I don't know if I've ever met anybody who had as strikingly similar a one as Alice Lee did. And I think Alice, in many ways, was as much mother as sister to Nell Harper because of that large age difference that you mentioned. She was 15 years older, and I think that rapport with Alice probably helped lead to some of the conversations with Nell Harper. There were some things that they were ready to set the record straight about. And one of them is what you just mentioned about Truman Capote. They were galled by the rumor that had circulated in some quarters that he somehow had been involved in the writing of the book.
Definitely involved in each other's life for a period. And then as Truman sort of spiraled down, she broke off the relationship. They both broke off the relationship and were quite estranged by the end of his life.
Well, you know, and one of the things that's interesting is I think conversely, I think she did was of great help to him when he was writing In Cold Blood.
Yeah, she went with him out to Kansas, right?
She did, and in fact, that was depicted in two movies that were in the works when I was living next door to them, one starring Philip Seymour Hoffman as Truman Capote, and it was fascinating to watch that movie with Nell Harper and see what matched her memory and what didn't. I think she had some resentment and anger about the way certain things had gone with him, but I think also sadness at the way his life turned out, that he died as early as he did. But it's remarkable to me when you think of those two imaginations living side by side as young children for a time.
I love the line that I think it might have been Alice said. It says, when you know, Truman was such a fixture in the home for the short, it was a relatively short amount of time. It was only, what, 9 years or six years?
Well, he would spend time with his aunt who lived next door.
But anyway, he would say something like, Have we swept Truman out yet?
Their father would have to ask sometimes at the end of the day, has anyone put Truman out? He liked to stay underfoot. And I think when you think about those two creative souls meeting, and I think the great good fortune probably to have met at such a young age, and it is unfortunate that as years went along, there were all kinds of strains and tensions that arose. He was helpful to her, though, when she first moved to New York. And so they were, over the years, helpful to one another in different ways.
My guest today is Marya Mills, a former reporter and feature writer for the Chicago Tribune. She have a relationship with Harper Lee. She was part of a newspaper feature. They became fast friends. She moved in next door for several years, and she's the author of the memoir, The Mockingbird Next Door, Life with Harper Lee. And she's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Well, there's another person that's very important in the Lee story, and that is the retired minister. In fact, last month when Alice died, he had this great line that says it was like the closing of a library.
I told him that was my favorite way of framing what her death meant. Yes.
And it's the Reverend Thomas Butts, who was the minister at the United Methodist Church there in Monroeville.
He was, yes, longtime Methodist minister, now in his 80s, remarkable man in his own right, who was involved early on in civil rights. And good friend to the Lee family for many years.
Yeah, and he had you spoke with him quite a bit and gave you some interesting insights into Harper Lee. For one, he would go to New York every summer and preach in New York, and so he saw Harper Lee in both the Monroeville environment as well as the New York environment.
It's interesting that you pick up on that because among the people I knew anyway, that was unusual. People tended to know her in one context or the other. And so it was especially interesting to hear his perspective on those two very different lives that she led. When you think about
how different were they?
Exactly. Well, I think for starters, the difference between a town of 7,000 people in South Alabama and where you grow up and are Mr. Lee's daughter, as well as world famous author, and the contrast with New York City, which afforded her some anonymity, I think, walking the streets. To go to a museum or to take the bus someplace that she didn't necessarily have in Monroeville. He talked about how much she loved New York City. I think she was somebody who went to the museums. She took him and his grandson to a ball game, riding the subway, I think, and talked about her love of history that was so apparent in Alabama being true in New York as well. He said they would walk down the streets, different neighborhoods in New York, and she could talk about the history of the buildings they were passing. And I think that was an abiding characteristic in both places.
Now, one of the things I found interesting was that while I know, I figured she was living a pretty regular life, she did attend functions having to do with To Kill a Mockingbird. I just assumed they were very careful in not letting the press into these sort of events, but she would talk about To Kill a Mockingbird, or and I think there was an annual luncheon somewhere in Alabama each year that she would go to.
That's right. They were rare, but she did make appearances, and the one you're referring to in Tuscaloosa, absolutely, for me, yielded one of my favorite experiences that she related to me. She had been quoted in the New York Times the day following one of those annual gatherings in Tuscaloosa as referring to Horton Foote, the Texas playwright who adapted the novel for the screen, as all those years later looking like God, only clean-shaven. And I remember her chuckling when we were having breakfast not long after that appeared on the Times and saying she had gotten a call from Horton Foote and picked up the phone in her living room in that little red brick house and heard God here. And it was her old friend Horton Foote calling to catch up a little bit, which they did. And she said he ended the conversation by saying, "Remember, God loves you." Click. And she related that with such a twinkle in her eye. And to me, it was striking how the affection and respect that endured all those years later for Horton Foote, for Gregory Peck, for Brock Peters, the actor who played Tom Robinson in the movie. I think for people who love the movie, it's heartwarming to know that besides being an adaptation that she was enthusiastic about, that was also the beginning of friendships that endured for a lifetime. Horton Foote kept writing plays into his 90s, Gregory Peck remained a good friend, Gregory Peck and his family. In fact, he has a grandson named Harper, those were people she referred to as some of the last true gentlemen. I think she saw an erosion of civility, maybe.
Yet she could be very salty herself.
She certainly could be. Yeah, she certainly could be. There was a feistiness there, and that was part of the contrast that was so fascinating with her sister. And a lot of their good friends that I was spending time with said the same thing, that these are two women who were so interesting in their own rights. And as sisters, fascinating, because they were quite different in temperament, and yet their lives were intertwined in such a significant way. Alice was much more, I think, kind of the steadfast, quiet personality, and probably, I think, an anchor for Nell Harper, and who was living a life where she was going between two very different places and dealing with fame on the level that she was. She also was able to travel more than Alice had, like to go to England. Mm. And her philosophy, Alice said, was for Nell Harper when she went to England, was to just find a town and go explore every nook and cranny.
And that's really what they did around Monroeville a lot, too. I mean, they would take drives.
Oh, that was, yes.
And you took many a drive with them as, and was it more a sense of this was something they were going to do and they invited you to tag along, or?
Oh, yes. They'd been taking those rides as sisters for many years before I ever came on the scene.
And so it was a matter of going to another small town or going to a little natural place. And I assume with Alice's knowledge of the area, it was like, you know, this encyclopedia sort of guiding the tour, I suppose.
It was, and Nell Harper herself, of course, had memories. I remember her pointing out some woods where she'd gotten lost as a child, and all kinds of memories that are of interest, I think, to people who love that book, because, of course, that town was an inspiration anyway for the one in the book, and the sense of this whole world that can exist in a small town, especially from a child's eye view. And I think appreciation of some of the characters that were maybe not just tolerated, but helped out. I was aware early on, though, that when we were taking these drives and I would be looking out the window of her Buick that Nell Harper would be driving, that they were seeing a different Alabama out the windows than I was. A lot of times they were seeing what they remembered from years before I was born. And, of course, I was seeing what was there at the time. And it was fascinating to try to capture some of the stories of a place that was, and in many ways really doesn't exist anymore. Glimpses of it do. When they went to scout a location for filming the movie soon after the book came out, they did go to Monroeville, the filmmakers. But even then, in the early 60s, it had changed too much for them to really be able to replicate that 1930s Depression-era town. And so they ended up filming in Hollywood instead.
Well, once you moved in next door, was there any sort of talk of of, it was just conversation, or was there, were you still a reporter at some point as you were having all these conversations with the idea of maybe a biography after her death or,
well,
or,
no,
or anything?
Well, we had talked about some of these things, and I mentioned the Truman Capote rumor being one of them, that they did want to set straight. And so we did some of that. And I would sometimes, I remember having a conversation with Nell Harper where she had this way of kind of wagging her finger, her index finger, and saying, you put that in there, or that's off the record. And
right.
so there was a sense of some of those things that she did want to emphasize and have me include are those things that were off the record. And so I made a note of those.
Certainly. I remember the Radio Monroeville, she basically went into a whole little monologue about, you know, who the biggest gossip in town was and how the sort of the gossip line moved in Monroeville. And then it was like, that's all off the record. And you go, yeah, I know. That's all off the record, right? Making sure you knew that.
Well, and it was interesting because I think one thing she wanted to illustrate was the fishbowl that a town like that can be, but at the same time not to cause embarrassment for the person she had designated as the gossip in chief, I would say.
Yeah. Now, this book came out when both sisters were living, and of course Harper Lee's still living, but not in great health. Any reaction from them about the book?
No, unfortunately, Nell Harper Lee had a serious stroke and hasn't been able to live at home since then. We didn't know it at the time, but I think this ends up being a chronicle of the last chapter of life as they knew it all those years. I rented that home next door to theirs from the fall of 2004 through the spring of 2006, and it was the following year that she suffered a serious stroke, which at the time, with her sister being so much older, didn't have a sense that the younger sister might be the one to first suffer that kind of an incident.
And then Alice still, I think she was still alive and kicking at her 100th birthday. It was a big celebration and still going into the office well into her 90s.
Right? Oh, that's right. She had such a sense of humor, and she was a force in her own quiet way. She and her sister used to fax the New York Times crossword puzzle back and forth when Nell Harper Lee was in New York. I know a lot of their friends felt that it was that voracious reading and that working of crossword puzzles, which their mother had used to do, that kept them as vigorous as they were.
Now, this is a sort of interesting point about the Lee household. When you first visited, there was no air conditioning in Monroeville in, 2001?
Well, they're not in that home anyway.
Yeah, no,
right.
That's what I meant.
What I meant.
In their home, there was no air conditioning. I don't think they even had a television till the late 1990s?
It was only sort of, reluctantly that Alice Lee had either of those things become
but the
a part
fax
of that
machine,
household.
The fax machine was very important, and it was because both of them were hard of hearing.
Yes, hearing was a problem for both of them. In fact, even though I was living next door, the routine, quite often if I was leaving something for them, an article for them to read or food or a book, whatever it was, I would usually leave it in a little plastic bag from the Winn-Dixie grocery store, hang it on their doorknob between the two doors, and then walk the short distance over to my house and fax them that I had left that on the doorknob. They navigated that as best they could, but it was a source of frustration for two women who were such conversationalists, loved not just to talk but to listen, that hearing was a factor for both of them. And for the two of them, when Harper Lee was in New York that portion of each year, that was a good way for them to be able to correspond quickly. Email was not going to be in the picture for either of them. As Alice Lee told me early on, we are not of the 21st century, hardly even the 20th.
Well, it's a really interesting book, The Mockingbird Next Door. Thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Former Chicago Tribune reporter and feature writer Marya Mills here on Studio Tulsa. She's the author of the memoir, The Mockingbird Next Door, Life with Harper Lee. It's published by Penguin Press. She'll be speaking about the book this evening at 6:30 at the Circle Cinema. Following her signing and talk, there'll be a showing of the classic 1962 film To Kill a Mockingbird. That gets underway at 7:30. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.